Item 15.14 is a request for emergency rules for the administration of the instruction in cardiopulmonary resuscitation in public school grant schools grant program 1CCR301-95 pursuant to 24-4-1036 Colorado Revised Statutes. The State Board is authorized to adopt emergency rules if it finds that immediate adoption of the rules is imperatively necessary to comply with state or federal law or federal regulation or for the preservation of public health, safety, or welfare, and delay in adoption of the rules would be contrary to the public interest. Mr. Commissioner, is staff prepared to explain the necessity for these proposed emergency revisions to the rules for administration of the instruction in cardiopulmonary resuscitation in public school grants programs? 1CCR301-95. Say that three times real fast.
Yes, they are. Ms. Sarah Matthews and Kathy Patrick will make the presentation. Didn't know if you wanted to open it up, Rebecca, with a couple of comments. We have the emergency rules, and then after you do the process on that, then it would make sense, and that's why you see the next item, and that is a separate item, is the notice of rulemaking. This emergency rules only last 120 days. So with that, Rebecca.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we do have two new grant programs that were created in legislation this last session in the health and wellness area. As was referenced, we have emergency rules in both of them so that we can meet our statutory obligations this year and get the new dollars to schools in a timely fashion. The first set of emergency rules that is before you today is the CPR rules. I will not match our chair in spelling all of that out. But it's in reference to House Bill 14-1276. The bill instructs the State Board to establish rules for a grant program that will train high school students in CPR and will provide $250,000 in total to be granted out to interested schools. Late in the session, there was language added to this bill that creates a requirement for schools to have all coaches trained in CPR. The combination of these two topics, both a grant for training students in CPR and a requirement that coaches must be trained in CPR, has created some competing concerns in the field. And since we don't have, by rule, we don't take public comment in emergency rules, I did want to make you aware of the concerns that were brought forward to the department. Essentially, in navigating those competing concerns, I would say all parties who are interested in this are thrilled that there will be dollars available for schools to increase the number of trained CPR providers, both minors and adults. And the way that the staff has navigated this is with sticking as close as possible to the statutory read of the rules in honoring in the CPR bill, which again is House Bill 14-1276, in honoring both Section 1 and Section 2 of the bill, which could be read as being in conflict with each other. The rules that we are suggesting allow schools to use the dollars for both training students in CPR and training coaches in order to bring their coaches into compliance, which they are now statutorily required to do by January 1st of 2015. With that, I will turn it over to staff to walk you through the nuance of this set of rules.
Okay. Chairman? So we followed very closely with the statute. Board is requested to promulgate rules to talk about the application process and any reporting qualifications that are to be used for this grant, and so we feel that it is very clear that districts like as Rebecca had said are very excited about the possibility of being able to train not only students but also staff or coaches in this process. Is there any questions on?
Shuffle.
So what I've heard is just that there's a, and you referenced it, right, that there's some concern in the field that what was meant more for students is being kind of diverted to coaches. Can you speak to how that's going to, how that valence will be addressed in the rules? I mean, is it, I just heard from the bill, people that sponsored the bill saying they feel like it's tilted more toward coaches than students.
Sure.
How do you look at that?
So the rules do allow schools to use the funds for either purpose. In the RFP, we will honor what we've been told was the intent of the legislation in preferencing dollars to schools that intend to train coaches and train students in a significant number, so a significant percentage of their population of eligible students who could be trained. What we are referencing in making that decision is in Section 2 of the bill, where it reads, on or after September 1st, 2014, each local education provider may apply for a grant or grants to provide instruction to students in any grades 9 through 12 and school staff in any grades 9 through 12 in cardiopulmonary resuscitation. And so that read led staff with some obviously policy advice to believe that the dollars are intended to be available both for staff and for students.
But coaches are often not staff.
It
or are
only,
they? Are
it
they
would only be for staff that are
coaches.
That these dollars.
Okay, so the
all coaches will be required, but only staff coaches can be
will be part of this training. This so money. They'll those non-staff coaches will need to find their own source
exactly.
of training.
Correct. And there is a little bit of, can I just add, there's a little bit of difference. The training that they're talking about for, or instruction for students is an hour training, hands-on on CPR and AED training. The coaches, it's a four-hour required certification, which is a two-year certification. So every 2 years, coaches will have to be recertified. So that's a little bit of a different process, a little training process.
Other questions, Dr. Sheffield?
Are there other resources for coaches to be trained in this? I think that was the issue. That there really isn't any other way for students to be trained. If you add the coaches in, your staff members kind of dilutes the pool, which is pretty modest at best anyway. What are the other ways that staff would get trained in this? It strikes me that they would already be trained or have trained.
Okay. In some districts, I just happened to talk to Douglas County just earlier this morning, and their district actually mandates that all coaches be certified, so they already have that in place. So it may not be quite as a contentious difficulty as we think. Mm-hmm. I think
that's
a lot
kind
of
what I thought they already have the resource and the requirement.
Right, right. Very often they do have trainers in staff in the schools that will be, you know, that do the training.
Is there a way to write that in the rules so if there's a preference for students since there's no other alternative for them to receive this training, whereas there is another avenue for the coaches?
Mr. Chair, currently the preference around that, because we felt like we had to adhere to the statute for the rules, the preference is in the proposed RFP that will be released pending the State Board approval of the rules today.
Do we have a copy of the law that just gives the language you just read? If we just read it again. Where is it again in the law reference that
sure.
it's students and coaches?
So it's page 4, it's section 2. 22-129.
Do we have that? Or do I just have
the rules?
Don't
have provide the statute. I'm sorry? It is 1276.
Okay.
Would you like me to read
read
reference? Sure. So in Section 2, it reads, on or after September 1st, 2014, each local education provider may apply for a grant or grants to provide instruction to students in any of grades 9 through 12 and school staff in any of grades 9 through 12 in cardiopulmonary resuscitation and the use of an automated external defibrillator.
So the language is there, yeah. Was there a letter that was supposed to we were supposed to have access to from someone?
Mr. Chair, because this is an emergency rulemaking hearing, accepting public comment would be in conflict with what the Administrative Procedures Act follows. Allowing public comment for one would mean public comment for all, and then it becomes then it falls into the permanent rulemaking process. And so, yes, we did receive letters. Mm-hmm. And the second item on the agenda today is the notice of permanent rulemaking. Mm-hmm. So there is an opportunity for the public to participate, but it is through the permanent rulemaking process.
So, emergency rule goes into effect immediately. Public rulemaking process follows. If it needs to be altered, the time frame on that would be months.
We are hoping, Mr. Chair, our goal is to bring this back and have the board vote on it before the end of the year, so that the permanent rules and the public have an opportunity to participate in a fairly narrow time frame, recognizing that there were concerns.
Mr. Chair.
Sure. Good.
It's, you know, this is one of those unusual situations. And because of the nature of the emergency rules, we've got to get the grant funding out to meet the timelines. But we're trying to respect the legislative intent, even though it wasn't quite written that way, handling it this way. And so we've tried to seek a balance, and I think we got a pretty good one. It's not perfect, but the way it was written was a bit different. So it's just one of those unusual situations. But then we, because this goes on for another year, I believe, am I right? Or is it just 1 year?
No, it's continuing.
Okay. Then for the next year, then we'll have the rules permanently in place after we do the emergency rules. And then if there's any adjustments, we can make that. And if they seek a legislative change next year, they can do that.
So is there a competition this fall or a grant process review this fall for funds? One between now and when the permanent rules are drafted?
Yes.
Correct. So I would just ask that when you write the RFP, that you consider that there's other avenues of support for coaches as opposed to students. And if we could get a report on that or just get some feedback on that, that would be great.
That's our intent.
We can do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Elaine's got a question.
Can you remind us where the grant money is coming from? Is it general fund money?
General fund.
So the legislature appropriated how much money for these grants?
$250,000.
$250,000? Some. What?
It's not a lot.
Everything's relative.
That's right.
In, because I don't think we ever discussed this when it was going through the legislature. What was the impetus for this bill? If you don't
Mr.
know,
Chair.
That's okay.
Mr. Chair, the American Heart Association is using this bill off of a model that has been passed in several other state legislatures focused on having students in high schools trained in CPR. The other impetus was a young man, I believe, in Jefferson County Public Schools, but I will double check, who was a student athlete who had a heart-related emergency on the field and was resuscitated by his assistant coach.
And
Jane?
I know.
Oops, sorry.
Well, I know that I think Deb just touched on this, but is it a requirement of a coach to know CPR?
Chairman, no, CHESA does not require it.
It is not required.
It's not required.
I would add, Mr. Chair, that this will also apply to staff, coaches, and all coaches in charter school settings. And because charter schools are, in many cases, not members of CHASA, this will be the first time that charter schools have had to come into a compliance regarding the training of their coaches as well.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, if I may, not just to pause the microphone, but in response to your question, Member Berman, the following paragraph after that statement is, and requiring coaching staff to obtain instruction in the effective implementation of CPR and use of an AED is an effective way to reduce risk to student athletes and to increase the number of adults in public schools who are able to apply and use these life-saving measures. Therefore, the General Assembly declares that it is in the best interest of Colorado to create a grant program.
So there is no, there's no staff person in a school prior to this legislation that's required to know CPR?
Prior to this, there was one staff member at all times has to be certified, one person in the school.
And that's the board under Board of Health rules.
Okay.
So,
okay.
At all school activities and school-sponsored events, so.
Has to have one person that's qualified for CPR.
Right.
Okay, that's my background info. Thank you very much.
Other questions?
Yeah.
Jane?
This could be one of the elementary questions that teaches one a lot if you ask it. What about liability? Are we, who handles that? What if there's a case that comes up, whether it be a student who is going to or has administered CPR on somebody? Or what about liability? How are those things handled with kids?
Chairman? There's the Good Samaritan Act. Every state has, and Colorado has a Good Samaritan Act that allows people in good faith to, you know, do to the best of their ability those type of procedures without liability, risk of liability.
That's correct.
So the intention is for kids to get training, preparation, life preparation. So this is not strictly confined to a school situation. I'm sorry, I've lost a school activity related incident. It's a life skill.
Thanks. No response. Other questions? No. Hearing none. Motion is in order.
I move pursuant to CRS 24-4-103, parent 6, CRS, that immediate adoption of the rules for the administration of the instruction in cardiopulmonary resuscitation in public schools grant program, parent 1, CCR 301-95, parent, is imperatively necessary in order to comply with HB 14-1276, which requires the Colorado Department of Education to administer a grant program whereby public high schools have access to grant monies to be used in the training of CPR and the use of an automated external defibrillator.
Is there a second? Dr. Scheffel seconds. Any objection? No objection. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is the timed item.
The notice of permanent rulemaking.
Oh. The follow-on to the conversation we were just having is a request to issue a notice of rulemaking concerning administration of the instruction in cardiopulmonary resuscitation in public schools grant program 1CCR301-95. Mr. Commissioner.
It is the same issue, but is the notice to start the rulemaking process, as Ms. Markle described?
Because the other one's an emergency, I assume.
That's correct, because of the nature of the grant program. So we're just asking for your approval to proceed.
Any
further questions? Okay, motion is in order.
I move to approve the notice of rulemaking hearing for the rules concerning the administration of the instruction in cardiopulmonary resuscitation in public schools grant program 1CCR 301-95.
Second. Jane. Moved and seconded. Any objection? Hearing none. Motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Now, do we want to
Do you have another one? Hand.
Do you want to do the timed item?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. We probably should do the timed item since it's noticed for 2:30, and then we'll come back with you folks. Thank you for being flexible.
What did you do to your hand?
A 200-pound mastiff went after my 5-pound Yorkie, and my hand was in the leaf.
The Yorkie's okay.
You saved the Yorkie. Well, how's the mastiff?
He's not under control.
He is.
A mastiff apparently attacked a Yorkie.
Next item on the agenda is an exclusive chartering authority hearing in which Summit School District is seeking to recover its exclusive chartering authority. During this hearing, the board is acting in its capacity to consider requests by school districts to grant them exclusive chartering authority. Thank you. In accordance with the board's exclusive chartering authority procedures, this exclusive chartering authority hearing will not exceed 30 minutes of presentation. The burden of proof is on the school district. Representatives from the school district and any party or entity wishing to present must sign in to speak at the beginning of the hearing, and I've received that now. So does the sign-in, procedural question, does the sign-in cease at this point since we've begun the hearing? Or can I hold it open, or does it matter? All right, so we've not received any written input from charter schools or other parties. After oral presentation, the State Board will deliberate and render a decision. State Board shall consider all information submitted at the time it renders its decision. Colorado State Board of Education will now conduct a hearing in the request of Summit School District to grant its exclusive chartering authority. The issue before the State Board of Education is whether Summit School District meets the criteria for exclusive chartering authority set forth in 22-30.5-504 Colorado Revised Statutes. The state board shall grant exclusive chartering authority if the local board demonstrates its compliance with the aforementioned Colorado Revised Statute and presents to the board a plan to implement a combination of the authorizing practices described throughout 22-330.5-504. In its application to recover its exclusive chartering authority, Summit asserts it meets the requirements of Colorado Revised Statute 22-330.5-504. State Board shall grant exclusive chartering authority to Summit if the State Board finds that Durango meets these requirements. Are there any questions about the procedure?
You said Durango and you said Summit.
Summit.
One or the other.
Summit, excuse me. I will now call each person who signed up to speak in this matter to address the board. Given the 30-minute timeline, I would ask each speaker to be as brief as possible in their comments. I'm sure the board will have questions. Members of the state board may interrupt you at any time to ask questions. Okay. So we have Heidi. Mr. Commissioner, you have a comment?
No.
Just waving your hand around. Heidi Pace.
Sorry, Heidi.
Yes.
And then following Heidi will be Margaret Carlson. And I'm assuming, well,
we're have sort of teaming
in front of you. Excellent. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, board members, and Commissioner Hammond. I'm Heidi Pace, as you know, superintendent of Summit School District RE1. This is Margaret Carlson, president of our Board of Education. We are here today seeking exclusive chartering authority for our local Board of Education to authorize charter schools within our district boundaries. Summit School District has been in full compliance with the provisions of the Charter Schools Act 22-30.5-101 and has no recent history of considering charter school applications or authorizing charter schools. To date, there has been one charter school in our district, which ceased its operations in 1999. This past school year, the Charter Institute received an application for a charter school to be located in Summit. However, the proposed charter school withdrew their application prior to the completion of the approval process. Summit School District has adopted the model CASB policies on charter schools and will follow those with regard to any charter applications received in the future in a fair and equitable manner. Summit School District has had exclusive chartering authority based on CRS 22-30.5-504-5BI, having fewer than 3,000 students. We currently have 3,287 students. Losing that authority when our population grew to over 3,000 students was an oversight. The Summit School District Board of Education therefore requests that the State Board of Education designate them as the exclusive authorizer of charter schools in Summit School District in accordance with state law. And Margaret and I are here and happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Members? No questions. Angelica does have a question.
Yes.
Well, I don't have a question, but I will say that district where I served as a board member, while we initially, I think in the mid-90s, were somewhat challenged by the development of charter schools, we've had such a good relationship mm-hmm. in the last very many years. Mm-hmm. And our charter schools are literally one of our choice schools, and all our schools in the district are choice schools. I think it's a very helpful way because the professional development, number of the district-wide efforts include those charter schools. So mm-hmm. if I had a preference as to which way new charter schools should grow, I think that's the ideal way because they get an awful lot of support from within the community, more support from within the community than if they are chartered from outside. That's my personal experience only, but it's really been a very good road. And I think I was trying to figure out this morning, I think our first charter will be, or is now 19 years old. I think they will celebrate their 20th anniversary next year. And it's just one of our schools. It doesn't even need the name charter.
Dr. Shuffle?
Why would you want to take away the option for schools to be chartered other than just through you? Schools want to have that option. Why wouldn't you want that?
Well, they're all our kids, and so we always want to be accountable for their education if they're going to be in one of our schools, including if that's a charter school.
Aren't you anyway, though?
Well, we feel that there's a little bit of removal if it's not right there with us and local. My background is in a school district that has a very large charter school. We had a wonderful relationship, and so I think that that's just a really good model being able to work together more closely.
If you're not the exclusive chartering authority, does it undermine what you just referenced?
I've never been in that situation, so I just know the other model works very well.
Good questions? Elaine?
Well, I think I'm responding to Deb more than to you guys, but I mean, I believe, in addition to Boulder, that DPS probably has the most charters of any school district and the most successful charters, and they have exclusive chartering authority. So we have no reason to believe they won't have a good relationship with their charters if they have charter applications. And if things go awry, we can take back the exclusive chartering authority. So I see absolutely no issue whatsoever or problem in granting them exclusive chartering authority.
What would charters say to that?
I think most charters, you know, if they were hostile, they wouldn't like it. But if they're friendly, they would say fabulous.
How many charters do you now have in
Summit? We don't have any.
You have plans for some? Or do you know?
We don't currently have any in the works.
No, our school district is fairly small. We've got 3,200 students, but we've got a variety of programming, and I think that's probably one of the reasons that there hasn't been a lot of interest in a charter school. We've got a small alternative high school. We've got a dual-language elementary school. We are a full IB district minus our alternative high school. So there has not been a lot of action in the community, or the community hasn't felt a need, I don't think, to add more options over the last, however many.
Since 1999.
Since 1999, there just has not been much interest.
Ma'am, go
ahead. But there were two proposals that, was it two proposals?
No.
That went away?
There was one charter school that predated both of our time in the district, and it ended in 1999. And then there was a recent application to the Charter Institute, but they pulled their application prior to the completion of the approval process.
But you're open to charter schools?
Absolutely. We've adopted all the CASB model policies, and we would certainly implement all of those. And as I said, I come from a large school district that had a very large charter school, and we had a great relationship.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Markle?
Mr. Harris, since this is a factual matter, when we noticed this hearing,
did we notice
the Charter School Institute and the applicant that's been referred to and did not hear back from them? So they both received notice of this hearing.
I'm sorry. Angelica was talking to me again. Would you start over?
It was just as a factual matter, as part of the process of sending the notice of this hearing. We provided notice to the Colorado Charter School Institute of this request, as well as to this proposed charter school applicant, and neither, there was no response at all to that notice.
Dr. Schiffel?
How much notice did you, when did you tell?
I think 30 days ago.
Yeah, it's been some time.
Okay, and just
July
18th. July 18th, okay. As a footnote, Mr. Dill is here if anybody has legal questions. Are there any other questions, conversation, thoughts? Okay, a motion is, I believe, then in order.
Where are we? Mm-hmm. I move to grant Summit's request for exclusive chartering authority.
For a second. Dr. Schroeder? It's been moved and seconded. Staff, please call the roll.
Aye.
Jane
Goff.
Aye.
Paul
Lundy.
Aye.
Ken Masnick.
Aye.
Marcia
Neal.
Aye.
Dr. Schroeder.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for driving down.
All right. Shall we look back? Margo's here.
No, she's not the same thing.
Okay, that's Okay, board members, I'm moving to item 15-16 at this point. I believe. Yes, I think I've got that right. And this, like the other emergency rule we just dealt with just a few moments ago, is kind of in a couplet. There's an emergency rule followed with a notice of rulemaking. on the same rule that would provide for public comment, broader engagement on the same issue as we move past this, quote, emergency, close quote, period. Item 1516 is a request for emergency rules for the administration of the School Health Professional Grant Program, 1CCR301-9094, pursuant to 24-4-10036 Colorado Revised Statutes. State Board is authorized to adopt emergency rules if it finds that immediate adoption of the rules is imperatively necessary to comply with a state or federal law or federal regulation or the preservation of public health, safety, and welfare, and the delay in adoption of the rules would be contrary to public interest. Mr. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This issue is twofold. It's very similar to the last one, except it's very clear, we believe. And the emergency rules is really necessary to administer and get out the grant funds. And then if you approve that, then we need to turn right around and then approve the notice of rulemaking in a separate action. So with that, Rebecca, do you want to speak?
Sure. Thank you. So similarly, we'll kick off emergency rules so that we can meet our statutory obligations and get dollars to schools as quickly as possible. This is a $2.5 million grant program that is related to the marijuana sales tax and uses that sales tax to provide those resources for schools to staff health professionals, so nurses, school psychologists, counselors, social workers, who would serve students who have high risk of either substance abuse or behavioral health issues. And again, this is related to the marijuana sales tax. So while our stakeholders who we've talked to are all, unlike the last issue, sort of unanimously excited about this grant program, did want to reference the fact that this money is obviously pending the sales tax dollars being available. And we know that we need to make rules on the grant program whether or not those dollars will be available, and then we'll issue the RFP in the coming weeks as we know more from our work with the Joint Budget Committee and the Governor's Office. Kathy, if you want to give us some detail.
Sure. So at this point, we're hoping to get an RFP out on or before October 1st, and then subsequently, May 1st would be the date that schools can apply for this grant. The rules include the procedures that for the application, some priority criteria that we are asking, and if again, this very closely follows the legislation, and the awards are good. It will be for up to one year. There's a reporting requirement and also evaluation that the Education Committee of both the Senate and the House will want to review each and every subsequent year that this is being funded. So, again, we are very close to follow what it is in the legislation, the requirements for the legislation.
Lane?
I just want to thank you for your advocacy on this because there's a lot of people fighting for this, for the marijuana tax revenue and the fact that we can get some in the schools to help kids with potential substance abuse is critically important. So, good work, team.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Scheffel?
This is related to substance abuse and behavioral health issues, is that right? Yeah. And what are those again? Is there a list of those? Behavioral health issues?
No, we didn't put a list in. Actually, what it will do is that the health professionals will be providing training to staff and to students and families, doing some screening and possible referrals to community-based organizations for substance abuse and behavioral health. So there's not a list of what they
would.
No.
Not yet, but it will be defined.
We definitely want to include that as we get further down the process.
So for the first RFP, is for the first grant iteration, is it defined in the RFP?
There's some reference in the legislation regarding disciplinary referrals, and so that would probably be the start that they'd be looking at. Screening, there's a number of screening tools that are out there that they could be using to identify kids with substance abuse or behavioral health difficulties. So.
Okay. All right. See how it gets defined.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Okay. Motion is in order.
This one? This one. Thanks. I move pursuant to CRS 24-4-103, parent 6, CRS, that immediate adoption of the rules for the administration of the School Health Grant Program 1 CCR 301-94 is imperatively necessary in order to comply with SB 14215, which I didn't know this was so long, which created the School Health Professional Grant Program, which requires the Colorado Department of Education to administer a grant program during the school year, which increases the level of funding allocated to secondary school health professionals to provide substance abuse and behavioral health care to students in public high schools and have substance abuse or other behavioral needs, and to provide training and resources for staff on the implementation of evidence-based programming on substance abuse prevention education.
I second it.
The motion. Elaine seconds. Staff, please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Paul Lindsay. Aye.
Pat Mazanek. Aye.
Marcia Neal.
Aye.
Dr.
Sheffield.
Yes.
Dr.
Schroeder.
Yes.
Motion carries. Don't go away. Item 1517, next item on the agenda is a request to issue a notice of rulemaking concerning administration of the School Health Professional Grant Program, 1CCR301-94. Mr. Commissioner.
Same issue as before, but this is a formal notice and action for notice of rulemaking. So,
correct.
Same issue.
Questions? No questions. The motion is in order.
Or does she have to read that whole thing again?
No, no.
No, this is a short one.
This is the real rule, therefore it's a shorter motion.
I move to approve the notice of rulemaking hearing for the rules concerning administration of the School Health Professional Grant Program 1 CCR 301-94.
Seconded by Elaine. Is there any opposition? Hearing none, motion carries.
That's pretty easy, wasn't it?
Thank you.
That was.
Okay, we're going to take a very brief break, then we'll come back to some emergency rules on online, I believe, and then we'll put us back in at least a linear sequential order on the day.